for the third time in season two. This is Pitch Invasion, where we talk all things African football and, of course, casting an eye on what is happening on the European landscape. And South African football is up and running. We had the second round of the APSA Premiership over the past weekend. Before we touch on that, let me remind you, my name is Lwazi Siqubu.
I'm Xolo Magwaza.
1-0 to the Arsenal.
And Emeka Enyadike. We're still hanging there.
Who's we?
We.
Just remind people.
Cuddle we. Pillars.
No.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion podcast, the podcast for football travelists.
I don't have a Nigerian team anymore. Unfortunately.
Interesting.
Dolphins
FC.
No, my team used to be Sharks. Uh-huh. They got merged with Dolphins. They are now called Rivers United.
Not Dolphin Sharks.
No. Unfortunately. Sharknado. I wish them well every week, but I don't have the same connection like I had with Sharks. Mm. Sharks was my DNA, just like Liverpool is.
You know, you speak about this connection, and I have to be honest. Over the last maybe three seasons, my connection to my two favorite teams has also subsided somewhat. Back home, that team I'm talking about is Kaizer Chiefs, but.
They are top of the log. And when I said it the first time, I said it even last week, you guys said, what are you saying? They are top of the log, and their top scorer is the center back.
I was going to touch on that. I will touch
you
on
know,
that.
I thought about you when you saw only. That. You were the first person I thought about when the moment that goal going, I was like, oh, Emeka said this.
And you know,
I'm like, Emeka was like, this guy's back. This guy's
he's not the only center back that's sitting atop the charts, but we'll touch on that a bit later. But again, Kaizer Chiefs, a much better performance this time against Black Leopards, Etegwini. Compared to their clash against Highlands Park, and much more positive signs if you are a Chiefs fan.
Yeah, it's a great start, 2-2, and they're playing well. That's the most important thing, I think, with Chiefs, is that, you know, last season they sort of grinded results. It looked like, you know, the results were lucky. Mm. This season, you know, it doesn't look like there's any luck to it. They're actually playing well. And, I mean, you know, obviously we touched on Tower there, Eric Matoa, and I think, you know, this guy, he's rejuvenated himself. Yeah. I don't know. He's literally come from the shadows. I mean, Chiefs had defensive issues last season. And I know he was struggling with injuries and, you know, he was just out of favor most of the time. And he's come back with some hunger this season. And, I mean, for him to be on the goal-scoring front as well, you know, it's good news for Chiefs because you've got a confident guy. And, you know, it bodes well for Ernst Middendorf because, remember, he was under pressure last season. I mean, I even heard rumors that, hey, he might not even come into the season as the new coach. So it's a great start for him. And this is what you want, you know, in terms of South African football, because Chiefs, you know, need to double check these numbers, but they are the biggest club in South Africa.
No need to double check.
Support-wise, and those odd, dodgy trophies they've won. You know, so to have them, you know, on the front foot, you know, leading the league, back in, you know, in the conversation in terms of South African football. I know it's only two games, but I mean, 2 games ago lost. The first 2 games last season, you know, we're already, throwing big questions about Chiefs.
I was going to touch on that because I think it took them about 5 or 6 games to win for the first time last season in terms of how they started. Draw against Sundowns, hammered by Wits. And then they had a couple of nil-nil in there somewhere. It was a 2-2 against Leopards last season. So they seemingly is
and threw away a lot of leads last season as well. And this season looks like, you know, they're managing to hold on to a lead, so which is good.
No, very good. It's good to see Kaizer Chiefs play like that. It's good to see. And I guess, I mean, you know, whenever they go to Durban is literally their second home.
Their home. I mean, we went there a few years ago for, I think it was Soccer X Africa. And a lot of people came from the UK, and so I rode in the same bus with them going to the game because we now got free tickets to watch the Chiefs versus
Emeka Amazulu game again.
And I'm
just kidding, free things. When are you paying for things?
Well, you know, sometimes you're part of the football mob, you know.
Oh, the football mob. Yeah. Do go on.
So, I mean, we were going there, and there was just like Kaizer Chiefs fans all over the place, and couple of the guys turned to me and said, like, you know, is Kaizer Chiefs actually based there or they're based in Johannesburg? Because, you know, and then we got into the stadium and it was like 80% Chiefs fans and 20% for the home team. It was just ridiculous.
And I mean, I guess they've taken a giant leap forward in trying to forget what happened the last time they were at the Moses Mabhida Stadium before this past weekend.
No, we couldn't forget that.
How would they forget that?
It hasn't been a happy hunting ground when it comes to cup competitions. That we have to be honest about. But again, they've started really well. 2 wins in 2. Scored now, how many goals? That's 4.
Yeah.
4. 2 of them belonging to Tawa. I think that's 5.
It's 5, yeah.
No, but they won the first game 3-2.
3-2 and then 5.
Okay. So it's 5-2 of those belonging to Tawa. I saw there was another chance that he got, I think late in the game.
Yes.
Where I was just like, look at that volley.
The guy, he's on a mission. He's on a warpath, you know?
Oh, man, had that gone in. Can you imagine? But I did mention earlier that he's not the only centre-back that is on 2 goals. Mzwanele Mahashe over at the Bloem Celtic. It's amazing how football does work, because if you look at the game one of the season, he was on the bench for Celtic at Pirates, and then had to come on because Letlabiga got injured. Came on, scored. And then on Sunday as well, he was one of 5. 5 men on the score sheet.
You know what's interesting about what you're saying about those goal scorers?
Yeah.
Is that they're on 2 goals. Mm. They're going to go some 4 months being in the top part of the charts in South African football. That's with the lack of goals that we score. So those two names are going to stay there up until October, and you know, as one of the few, you know, or Limelin's one of the leading goal scorers, those two defenders.
For quite a while.
With those 2 goals. That's how crazy. Or let's just say disappointing the scoring is in South Africa.
I can definitely agree with that. And I mean, again, a word of well, I have to mention Kwande Mgonyama as well, who also got on the score sheet for Maritzburg United as a centre-back, but playing as a right wing-back. Yeah, guys, this 2019-20 season has got a lot to offer.
The shock for me was, you know, Celtic. Mm. You know, and I think that this season we probably don't know what's going to happen. It's looking like one of those seasons where there'll be like 7 or 8 contenders.
I can really get behind that. I can get behind that.
I mean, Celtic looked good against Pirates. You know, they played obviously top 2 best teams in the country, so that result was not surprising if they'd lost, which they eventually did, but. You know, their football was still, you know, really, it looked positive. They were on the front foot, they were on the charge. And they could have even scored a couple of goals against Pirates.
Yeah.
So, you know, to see 5, look, I'm not surprised that they scored a lot. 5 was the surprise. But, you know, when I looked at them against Pirates, I thought, man, you know, Celtic mean business this season.
And they really do. They really do. The way that they played against Pirates, the way that they played against Arrows. And I was talking to Mzamo just before we started about Coach Steve Kombela. Before the game, he had mentioned just how important it will be to still be defensively compact on transition, because the team that loses the ball, and Arrows and Celtic, they play very similar type of football. So the team that loses the ball will be under a lot of pressure. And literally 30 seconds into the game, Arrows lose the ball, Mabena goes, scores. 12th minute, same thing happens. They lose the ball on transition, they get punished. And you can see just the way that Lehonolo Siema and John Maduga have set up their team. We touched on them last week and gave them a lot of praise. You can see the way that they've structured that team. A lot of young, fresh-faced players who have got no fear, and going forward, at the very least, are extremely, extremely impressive. And that's what you get when you've got a pipeline from the MDC that really is feeding Bloemfontein Celtic, and they've shown that they've got ability in bags.
I think one thing they've done is they've struggled in the last couple of seasons with finances.
Yeah.
And, you know, we always heard they were going to be sold and all kind of things. So I think, you know, for me, which I think would be a shame, because, you know, Bloemfontein Celtic are a classic example of how a community club should be. And so, you know, it's really interesting to see them being able to pull in a lot of youngsters into the team and actually go out there and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks and see, you know, if they're going to sustain it. Because I think that once you have these youngsters and you give them the belief, and they know that, okay, they're going to play every week.
Yeah.
They'll do everything to stay in the team, yeah, rather than lose out to some more experienced players. So, it's something we haven't seen so much in the PSL, with teams being willing to Sundowns did that a few years ago with Percy and some of the youngsters, but
yeah,
I think that this is really interesting.
To echo your point, you know, I think when you look at it this way, they're almost forced to do that because of their finances.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, that pressure has, you know, resulted in a few diamonds that we see in Bloom Celtic. And it might be, it should be a cursor to a lot of PSL teams. Like, look, you've got the MDC and all these reserve teams and your academies. Let's start filtering in a lot of these guys because some of them, you know, are... we don't know what they have until you actually throw them out there, and they get lost, you know, playing, you know, either to NFD sides or obscure leagues and so forth, and you know, we never get to see them reach to that full level. And I think it's also important for Celtic to stay in the league, because remember now, they're the only Free State team there, you know, and if we want to spread football across the countries, you know, all four corners and in the heart, you know, we've got to have a team in Bloemfontein.
Yeah.
We've got to have a team doing well. You know, and I also think we have to add that I don't think it was difficult for them to be motivated for that game. I think all they had to do was show a picture of Steve Comparo. You know what I mean? I think the Celtic owners made sure that, listen, this guy, we cannot lose to this guy, so make sure that we beat this team and beat them good.
Yeah, and a lot of, before we move on, a lot of positives from that game for Celtic. I think the one, Mendy Masuku, you know, a player who
rejuvenated
a couple of,
well,
you know, a couple of seasons ago had so much potential. We're thinking, okay, this guy can take the next step. You know, went off the boil a bit, but he looks like a man who's, you know, intent on getting back to those levels. He's still got plenty of time on his hands as well. And lastly, the return of the Siwelele crowd, the return of seeing Celtic fans fill the stadium and sing their lungs out from minute 1 to minute 90. That for me was really amazing to see. And you speak about Steve Kompela after the game. As I was chatting to Siema, Kompela made dash to the fans to join them in, I don't want to say celebration because he had just been hammered 5-0, but I guess just in saluting the crowd and saying, yes, I might have left the team under some difficult circumstances, but I'm still with you. You're still, you know, because it's home for him as well, you know.
Yeah.
So that was good to see. That was really amazing to see. And I hope we get, you know, similar scenes as we go on in the season. But again, Bloom Celtic, they are taking a lot of confidence to a big game that they're going to be coming up against this coming weekend in the MTN 8. They've got a certain Mamelodi Sundowns in sight in the quarterfinals of the MTN 8. Now, let's talk about the CAF Champions League. It has started. It is underway. Or rather, the CAF club competitions. Not a great start for South African teams in the top tier of the flagship tournaments on the African continent, Ola.
Yeah, it wasn't a good start, you know. I think Pirates, they sort of underestimated Green Eagles. And, you know, I've actually watched quite a bit of Green Eagles, you'll be surprised.
Yeah.
And they're actually not bad. They're actually not bad. Yeah. I mean, they are up there with the Zanacos and the Zescos, you know, in the Zambia Super Division, you know. So they're actually quite a decent team. And, you know, to walk away with a 1-0 loss away from home, you know, I don't care. Champions League, CAF Champions League, there's nothing too bad. You can't be too disappointed about that. It's not terrible. You know, but they just have to get the job done. And my only problem is that, which was the same thing we discussed last week with Pirates, is that, you know, they tend to sleep in games. And again, you know, it was a moment where Pirates were just sleeping. And before you know it, boom, a goal goes in. And you cannot do that 1-0 down away from home coming into the second leg. They're going to have to really play a complete performance from start to finish and, of course, keep a clean sheet. So that does worry me. But I know I'm a Pirates fan, but I'm going to push that aside. TS Galaxy, how about that? You know what I mean? And this is something I've been calling for last season, that, you know, we need to get more teams into continental football. We need to see the TS Galaxies, what those type of teams can do, you know, against the sort of African sides. Because for me, you know, we have an idea, an indication of what Chiefs, Pirates and Sundowns can do, right? Of course they can go pretty far and pretty deep, but for me it's the next level, the next tier of South African teams that I need to see. And obviously, you know, Wits and SuperSport are also powerhouses in South African football, but even, you know, slightly below those guys, you know, in terms of reputation, I want to see what our football is like, you know, across the continent. And I think, you know, we need to keep an eye on TS Galaxy and give them all support and, you know, just praise the efforts that they've done. I mean, in their first outing in continental football, and they walk away with a victory. That is huge.
They've highlighted their ambitions. I mean, they haven't hidden, you know, exactly what they want to do and their plans. And I guess this is this result anyway is just a you know, another step forward for a team like TS Galaxy, who, as far as they're concerned, are good enough to be playing top flight football in South Africa.
No, for me, I think that, you know, they've just proven that their win in the cup or how far they got in the cup wasn't the fluke.
Yeah,
and you know, for them, this would be like a logical step. You know, they do well in Africa, and hopefully they do it much better in the NFD and get into the PSL, because that's a team that is showing that they're very well run. They're looking like a team that has a good how would I put it, a good orientation and also perspective as to where they want to be.
Yeah,
and you know, something that Chiefs haven't done in the last couple of years is take African club competition seriously. I'm glad to see you know, a young team getting in the mix, and also hopefully they become a name that people get to record with in Africa.
Yeah. Well, we certainly will be watching their progress in the CAF Confederation Cup with keen interest. And a word as well on Mamelodi Sundowns and their defeat again, only 2-1, but still the alleged cracks within the Sundowns setup that people have talked about since the start of the season. I guess that just fanned that flame that people are seeing, that there might be one or two cracks within the Sundowns setup. A result like that?
No, I don't think so. I think that Sundowns, you know, they're suffering from like an afterburn because they've been playing, you know, for the past couple of seasons, and not getting enough break. And then, you know, they were back in preseason, and not too long ago they were in Zambia. I think that, you know, they've got an away goal, so they'll come back home, and they need to just one nil to qualify. And I think they've got the experience and know how, and at home they're also a very different team. So I think that they will pull through and get a result. But this should be a warning for them that, you know, they shouldn't underestimate any team in Africa. In as much as they have made waves in the last couple of years, they definitely need to step up and be what they are, because that's what Al Ahly and all the other big teams, when they play against teams that they should beat, they actually go there and beat them.
Yeah, I'm not so worried about Sundowns, to be honest with you. I mean, this is, you know, they've got a hand on African football now, you know. So obviously defeat is disappointing for that particular result, but you know, the overall picture, I think Sundowns will come through and they'll get it together. Like Amika said, I think there's a bit of fatigue. Remember, not just the squad, but they've got a handful of Bafana players as well, and international players. Mm. So some of those guys, I don't even think have had more than 2 weeks of rest in the last 3 to 4 years. So I think once, you know, the season just pans out and everybody just, you know, gets more settled, back to business for Sundowns.
Okay, so we do expect to see Sundowns and Pirates get back on the winning trail in the second leg of the CAF Champions League. But there's been so much happening in South African football just within the first 2 weeks of the new season. We've seen the multi-choice Tuskegee Challenge. It's massive, that's what they call it now. You know, bigger and better. We've seen the start of that. We've got varsity football on the go. We've got the Absa Premiership on the go now. But some excitement, real excitement, has been coming out of the first division of South African football, which from here on in is going to be called the GLAAD Africa Championship. And it gets underway this weekend, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a certain team that will make a lot of the old topies, the older generation, very happy in South African football. Maroka Swallows.
You know what? I'm going to be watching a lot more Swallows games than I probably would have thought I would to. My dad's a Swallows fan.
Yeah.
So I can imagine, you know, the excitement that, you know, he must be having. And a lot of, like you said, old topies. Because, you know, a lot of people, the youngsters listening in, better remember that the original Soweto Derby is actually Pirates and Morocco Swallows.
Yeah.
That's a story now.
And Swallows, you know, are... talk about the pillars or the foundations of South African football.
Yeah.
You're talking about Morocco Swallows.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You go to the Andres Chakampond or the Ace Mninis of this world, and then you can go back to, you know, the guys that we had, like the Cesar Nombe, Tutsulupa, Gary McNabb, Warren Lewis, you know, the list is endless. I mean, even the likes of Steve Lukule, who made their debuts at 16. So Swallows have a rich pedigree in South African football. So it's really good to have them back. And you hope that this time round, you know, they learn their lesson and they get their act together off the field. Because I think one of the biggest problems with Swallows, which is something that I know from, you know, inside, is that there was a lack of organization and foresight.
Mm.
And that's why they fell behind. And I mean, you look at the fact that there was a year, I can't remember the specific date, where they were literally a Hans Vonk mistake away from winning Premier League title.
Yeah.
Hans Vonk playing for Ajax, handing, you know, Pirates the goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Swallows and Gordon Eagerson lost the title that year. And that could have changed the course of history. You know what I mean? Swallows would have won a title.
That was 2012 or 2010.
Somewhere there. I can't remember the exact date. But that would have changed the course of history. And, you know, 2 years after that, they went to oblivion.
Mm.
So you need teams like that, you know, to get back into the mix in terms of conversation. And to me, it would be the equivalent of Nottingham Forest back in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to take it, you know, for use an example from abroad. So I think it's exciting. Hopefully they just do the right thing. Hopefully they get the right people in, you know, behind the scenes as well to take the club. And I think this is an exciting time for South African football. This is, like I said, one of the giants of our game. You know, they're back in the fold. And who knows? I mean, opportunities like the Nedbank Cup, as you can see with TX Galaxy, they got that. And, you know, they won that and they're back in African football. So hopefully, you know, competitions like that, you know, get Swallows, you know, back in the fray. And let's get back to, you know, the Rand Stadium Swallows. Let's get back to those days, man. You know, I actually do miss that. What was that maroon and white?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I hope they don't change anything about the club. The badge must stay the same. You know, don't fly me, fly with the birds. Don't follow me, follow the birds. That needs to stick. We need Swallows back in South African football.
Well, credit to the people that are actually, you know, that are responsible for making it happen and making sure that Swallows is back in the forefront of South African football. And I guess they're back in this league that they're going to be playing in a very good period as well, where sponsorship has come in, and now we are also going to be seeing some of the games televised live, which is something that has been, you know,
long overdue.
A really good move that has been made by Glen Africa.
You know,
really,
who first called for that? Of all people, Carlos Alberto Pereira, when he came to South Africa. First of all, he was actually the reason they established the Monday Reserve League.
Yeah.
Because he was saying, guys, we can't be having a professional league and, you know, there's no Reserve League. So they started the Monday Reserve League, and then, you know, somewhere along the line we have, you know, obviously Disky Challenge is an entity on its own, but he called for the first division.
Yeah, but the NFD was very well organized. Remember, it was sponsored by Mvela.
Yeah.
But he called for that to be televised. He called for that to say, guys, look, we need a reserve league. Your first division has to be, you know, at least be seen and be viewed so that people can see these players.
Yeah.
And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember a time, you know, when it was still the Mvela League, where there was some buzz and excitement. And Pure Shabalala actually played for Bafana while playing in the NFD for Free State Stars.
Yeah.
So that means that, you know, he got the spotlight and he was seen. And they were like, man, okay, let's just wait for the transfer window. This guy's out of here.
Yeah.
So now we can get to see a lot of these players. And obviously, I'm sure the performances of players, you know, changes some 10-15% when you know you're being televised.
Yeah.
So it's just good for the better of the game overall for South African football.
Yeah, we cannot wait for it to get going and... you know, hopefully by the time, you know, by this time next year, we're talking about a successful GLAAD Africa Championship. And, you know, everyone that is part of it will certainly be looking forward to it as well. Because, again, financial...
the money's there, guys. The money's
muscle
there.
That has been pulled in is great. It's great for the South African National First Division. We've needed it for a long time, and it's finally here. Let's move abroad now and have a chat about... Well, we spoke last week about what is definitely everyone's favorite team now in South Africa, Club Brugge. And their social media team, which I'm sure right now is scratching their head because there's a South African fan page or a fan account on Twitter that has literally just hijacked everything about Club Brugge. And it's great to see, but I can imagine if you're in charge, you're the admin in charge of the official account of Club Brugge, you're just wondering, because again, there's a lot of South Africans who are not only, you know, using English in engaging, they're using our own languages as well, which is, again, really awesome to see on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, if we want the land, we want the social media accounts as well. So we're coming to take everything, you know, all at once. And I mean, you've got our brightest star abroad killing it. That's two in two.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's not tap-ins. It's the second goal.
I mean, that was fantastic.
Again, first touch, and then he's just, wow.
You know, I'm reminded of Sibusiso Zuma a lot when I see the Percy Tau story.
Yeah.
Because this is exactly the same sort of path that Sibusiso Zuma went when he went to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Was that, you know, this exciting guy from South Africa who, and remember Sibusiso Zuma, he was a wide player who could actually play anywhere up front.
Yeah.
And essentially, Percy Tau is the exact same sort of player. And what I like is they're both level-headed. Mm. You can tell that for them, it's business first. They're not going to be worrying about the weather, whether, you know, the food and the culture is different. They're there to do a job.
Yeah.
And two in two, I mean, already you set yourself up with amongst the fans. And once the fans, you know, get a liking of you, which is something that I saw with Sibusiso Zuma. The fans really got behind him, and he's considered a club legend. Mm. So much so that Zuma's got, you know, FC Copenhagen's goal of the century.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So once Percy, you know, established himself on the field, that then is going to translate to the fans, and that helps a big deal in Europe for African players when the fans get on your side. Mm. Because then, you know, I mean, in Europe, unlike in Africa, fans actually have a huge say with how the clubs run things, especially those type of clubs like the Club Bruges and a lot of the...
Yeah, and some of them have ultras as well.
You know, the clubs with ultras.
Yeah.
So if you get in with those guys, do you know what I mean? You could have a really, really good career there. So I like what Percy's doing on the field, but I like what he's doing. Well, let me just say, I like that it's going to help his case and his cause even more with the fans outside the field, because that's where, you know, he needs to also tell.
Here's a report from Result Sports, just an update sent through from Mario. He says Club Brugge has gained 30,000 followers on Facebook in the last 2 weeks, half coming from South Africa. And on Instagram, he says it's been a bit quiet, which is about 10,000 with 2,000 coming from South Africa.
I'm one of them.
And they're still compiling the one for Twitter, where they think that there's a lot more traction.
Yeah, so but Mario's making a huge mistake there, because there's Twitter and there's Black Twitter. So
can Mario just dissect
Twitter and then see if, you know, what are the numbers on Black Twitter? I'm not sure he's aware of that.
You know, I'm actually glad you mentioned Sibusiso Zuma, because can you imagine if back then, you know, and I'm talking about the whole thing, you know, we're touching on Marcus Rondos now, and just how good a period this is for them to be back in the forefront with what's happening with the GLAAD Africa Championship. You look at Sibusiso Zuma, you look at someone like Sean Bartlett, someone like Lucas Hadebe, who is revered at Leeds.
That guy does not have to pay for a single meal.
Do you understand
in Yorkshire?
What I mean? Now imagine, and a lot of the I guess the lack of knowledge from a South African point of view about all of that is we didn't have access to it.
Yeah.
You know, imagine if there was Twitter and there was all those things back then.
Lozzy, yesterday.
Imagine.
Right? Yesterday.
Yeah.
Last night, 24 hours ago.
Yeah.
Okay. I was at work and I was roping in a young guy and I said, well, you know, don't judge the PSL or, you know, what you see now. This is not the best time. You know, it's a revolution going on. Our players are coming back. Do you know who Sibusiso Zuma is? I had to pull him by the ear. Sit down. Watch. Do you know what I mean? And I had to show him that goal of the century. Mm. And I'm like, this is the caliber that we had in South African football. Yeah. But Sibusiso Zuma picked up the baton from the Lucas Radebes, from the Phil Masingas. And then the Bennies took it, the Stephen Pienaars and so forth. So what Percy Tau was doing here is massive. Because there's also a cultural change that he has to sort of impart in our players. Because South Africans, as people, this is outside of football, we're not the most traveled people, and we're not the most well-versed people, right? We're introverts. Mm. And as much as we're allowed here, but take us outside of our country, we're introverts, right? And that's where a lot of players have struggled. And Percy right now is flying a flag so high, the baton that he's carrying, right? He's actually, you know, in a relay, he's the guy that he's not finishing. Yeah. He's the guy giving everybody a good start.
Yeah.
So players need to have a look at that and draw inspiration from that. Because we sit here and we watch the other African teams, and you look at, you know, when they pull up the team lineup and they pull up the names and then the clubs that you're seeing, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, Bruges, Liège. Again, yesterday, I had to pull that same individual. Say, go look at our 2002 World Cup squad, Bafana Bafana. Do you know, right? 23-man squad, okay? Do you know how many local players we had? Take a guess, 23-man squad. No, that's too few. One is too few. Take a guess. Take an educated guess.
It's probably
23.
Probably 4, 5.
Educated guess.
3.
Right? Not bad. 6.
6, okay.
6 out of 23 in the squad that went to Korea, Japan.
Yeah.
Right, 6 out of 23. I'm looking there. Watford, Fulham, Standard Liège, Lokomotiv Sofia, Lokomotiv Moscow, United. Porto, Manchester United. That is what we need in our country, especially at the national level. So what Percy Tau is doing is really, really something that we cannot take lightly and has to be a blueprint, not only for the current PSL players, but also for the guys that are 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, to say, look, guys, there's the map. There's the blueprint.
Yeah.
Just following Percy's steps, right? And you too might not be Club Brugge, might be, you know, the Liverpools, the Arsenals, the Portos, and so forth. So hats off to Deco, and, you know, I'm sorry to Brugge's social media team, but we're taking over. We're definitely taking over.
Mika, just from your point of view, I mean, from an African perspective, That's you know, the point that Gola's making about this age that we're in is also extremely important, because, you know, we can spend the whole day counting the number of legends that the African continent has produced, and, you know, you've been fortunate to see a big number of them, but for those, maybe the generation younger than myself, you know, as a 30-year-old, maybe the generation that the late 90s, mid 90s, they didn't get a chance to see. You know, the only way they can see those players is, again, YouTube and things like that. So the social media space is playing so much more of a role these days than obviously back then.
Yeah, I mean, the difference now is that, you know, if someone is doing something remarkable like Percy is doing, you get to see it. Back then, we had to wait once a week to see a Thursday night show that was a highlight show. And if you managed to squeeze in one or two Africans, then we know, okay.
We had to wait for was a weekend every Friday.
Well, I mean, look, that's how it was. So, right now, which for me, I think, you know, the biggest, my biggest problem I have with the PSL is the players need to aspire to greater things, because that's how they then show that they represent the best, probably one of the best leagues in Africa. Because once you've done it at that level, then you go out and try and prove yourself out there. And we saw, you know, players like you know, Benny McCarthy going from, he didn't even really make the cut so much in the PSL before he left, you know, because it was a 7-star.
Quentin Fortune didn't even hear a PSL whistle in his life.
But I mean, there are quite a few good ones. I mean, Lucas Radebe was very well established here before he went to England and proved himself. So some of these players, they don't want to put in the
hard
work.
Although he was lucky, he didn't run against Potoso Makanye every week.
they don't want to put in the hard work. And maybe if if some of the other players like Neil Tovey and co, you know, were a bit younger by the time South Africa was admitted into football, they too would have made it there. But you look at the progression of South Africa, that team that got to 2002, I thought even the team in 2000 was stronger. Mm. But 2002, they had brought in a few more younger players. But they hit their peak in 2000. Unfortunately, they met up with Nigeria in the semifinals in AFCON. That was a pivotal moment for them. And then, you know, they also had this period where they kept changing coaches. But you found that
had,
you
know, the period.
Well, I will look. Well, I mean, back then
still have the
back then, you know, they were unnecessary changes considering how good the team was. But when you look at it today, you find the Bafana team struggles to find players who are playing at that level.
Yeah.
And even though the ones that are playing abroad are playing for teams that are not too good. And I for me, Percy's move to Club Brugge, I think Club Brugge gives him even more opportunities than Brighton.
Yeah.
Well, because Brighton, absolutely, he probably doesn't get European football. Mm-hmm. But with Club Brugge, he does well. Yeah. And another team comes in and offers money for him, and then he goes.
Now, literally, the sky is literally the limit for him, and he's in a space, and it seems like every week we touch on this, he's in a space where, you know, not a lot of South African players in the last 10 years, at the very least, have had the opportunity to be where you are, again, playing Champions League football, yet you are literally only at the start of your career in Europe. So, all the best to him. We, again, we'll just continue watching, and we'll continue bombarding the Club Brugge Twitter account, because that's who we are. That's literally who we are. But also, we cannot, spend too much time without talking about the start, finally, of the Premier League. 2019-2020 is up and running, and I guess true to form, there was just goals literally everywhere on the opening weekend, including, we have to start with this, four at Old Trafford. Again, we were talking about this before we started. As a United fan, I won't even lie, did not see that coming. I don't think anyone saw that coming, but 4-0 was the final score.
Yeah, this 4-0, sorry, it looks like the 4-0 of Chelsea against Man United when Mourinho went back there.
Oh yes, yes, yeah.
You know, so it's a refreshing start, and I think that, you know, Man United, if there's a team that's under pressure to try and catch up with where Liverpool and especially Man City are, it's United.
Definitely
so
United,
it's good that
they need to catch up to Arsenal first.
Well,
there's nothing to catch up to.
Hang on a second.
What are we catching up to?
Whoa, wait.
What are we catching up to?
The point is the 1-4-0.
You don't go from 6th to 2nd.
No.
The 1-4-0.
What are we catching up to?
Which means that as we speak, you know, we said the same thing about Chiefs last season.
Yeah.
As we speak, Man United are in the conversation for now.
Okay, Chiefs was 3 games. Man United is one game.
There's nothing to catch up to with Arsenal. We're gonna get to your team, please. Allow Emeka.
Yeah. So I think for me, you know, getting the result was important, and also for Ole, because he finished the season really badly after doing enough to get United going. So for him, finally, especially with why I was very interested in that game was particularly the fact that he let Lukaku go, and I've always felt that. Somehow, whilst Lukaku is such a great striker, I think that, you know, Roberto Martinez has found a very good way to use him for Belgium, where he comes deep, and then he finishes up a lot of the flowing moves with Hazard flying out wide.
Yeah.
What I've seen with United is, I've always felt that Martial and Rashford give them the freedom of the pack, and they'll fly. Yeah. And, you know, you saw how much that worked with Pogba, almost being also allowed a bit of freedom. So I think that the United needed this win, and hopefully if they get another win, then you know, that might give them in a position. Because right, they're in a very good space now, because they actually play good attacking football. Defensively, getting Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire
made them really solid.
I wish they kept under Herrera, because they've got probably, for me, maybe the best keeper in the world.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he played with a very bad defense in the last couple of seasons. But United look very, very good to get results. They might not. I thought maybe for most of that game, Chelsea played better than they did.
Yeah.
But they were focused. They got the results, and even though Pogba says something about not being not being sure of where his future is. Yeah. I think if I was him, I would settle down and just play.
Yeah, but you know, I must say something about United's win. That was alarming, right? And this is going to sound contradictory because, I mean, at the start of the game, Chelsea actually played quite well.
Yeah.
You know, like they were, I would say, you know, no offense to Tammy Abrahams, but, you know, they were a A-grade caliber striker away from taking the lead a couple of times.
Yeah.
Right? But Tammy Abrahams has got time to get to that level.
Lampard should have started with Giroud.
I'm getting there, right? Lampard's starting lineup. Okay, that was a preseason starting lineup. Okay, to have no Kante on there, no Giroud, no Marcus Alonso, that was a preseason lineup. And what I don't get with Frank Lampard is that surely in a game of this magnitude, I don't care if guys got off the plane last night. Do you know what I mean? That's the sort of game where it's the first game of the season against a team that's going to be challenging in positions. Yeah. Let's put the title aside, right?
Yeah.
We all know that Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, that top four, if you want to put it that way, mm-hmm. right? That fourth spot last season could have been any of us three,
yeah.
right? So in that game, first of the season, you put your damn strongest lineup out there. And that lineup to me was unbelievably weak. I know it's hindsight, but I'm not surprised it eventually got to four.
Yeah.
Because Chelsea just didn't have the poise. They looked inexperienced as well, right?
They did.
They really didn't. They looked like they were run.
For first game, you don't want to get it wrong from the one. I think
and he got it completely wrong.
And definitely not as Frank Lampard in your first game as well as coach, because, you know. And
why was Kante on the bench?
Mm.
But he cut. Oh, so 3-0 down. Hey, I know. Let's bring Kante.
Listen,
so
I mean,
3-0 down. Let's bring Kante.
The whole thing.
If he needs to recover, right? Apparently, he needs to recover. 3-0 down, you're chasing a game and you're bringing on a guy that needs to recover. I'm sorry.
The whole thing is the whole thing is with
that doesn't make sense.
The whole thing with coaches is that, you know, well, the narrative is that if a player is good enough to be on the bench, he's good enough to play. So if he is on the bench and you're talking about recovery,
I agree with you 100%. The Lampard thing that bewildered me was that at 3-0 down, Kante is going to be doing more running than at 0-0.
Yeah.
Okay? Because now Man United are running through and he has to chase Pogba, he has to chase Martial. He's at a bigger risk
Pogba,
at 3-0 down than he would be at 0-0. So why would you bring him on then?
No, that's a fair question. Fair question. But I mean, so okay, Frank Lampard, Emeka. It's a crushing defeat first up, but again, he's, I guess, a Chelsea legend. He's English, so he's got plenty of leeway. But it doesn't make things easier now going up to the Super Cup clash against Liverpool, because he loses that and you're already
put out.
Three steps behind, having just started.
Well, look, he can afford to lose the Super Cup. What he can't afford to lose is the next league game. Because, you know, he's got everything wrong in terms of his selection. To his credit, he did say, well, I'm not going to get players who are not fit to play. Maybe that's what he had. Maybe some of the players needed another 1 week of recovery to get into shape. But nobody, the fans won't have it. After a while, it would be a case of, you know, and someone made, I had a meme. I saw a meme yesterday. I don't know if it was created or if it actually did it, where they said, you know, we don't want, give us a coach, not a legend. You know, it's going to get to that point where, okay, thank you very much. I mean, a few years ago, Kenny Dalglish, probably the last guy to win the league for Liverpool, was manager of.
A few years ago. Do you know what I mean? Did South Africa even have a national flag at that time? We didn't even have a national flag. Or, do you know what I mean? Or a national anthem at the time Liverpool and Kenny Dalglish won the league. Whoa. Can I just say something about Can I just say something about Frank Lampard?
Yeah.
Frank Lampard is what you call collateral damage. Okay, for everybody that's in first year varsity, go Google what collateral damage is. Okay, let me explain. It is a very clever decision and deceptive what Chelsea have done in putting Frank Lampard in. And I think we're not seeing this. You know what they've done, right? They've said, listen, we're in a transfer ban. We know we're going to be terrible, right? We know we're not expecting much.
Mm.
Let somebody else take that form, right? let that be a guy that's trying to earn his straps in Frank Lampard, as opposed to getting a big name coach and, you know, have his legacy and his name tarnished. In a season like this where we cannot sign anybody, we've lost some players, and the squad is not looking good. Let that rather be Frank Lampard, a new coach, than let it be a guy of, you know, the top level coaches. And I think that's what they've done here with Lampard. Talk about a hospital pass. They've given him a team with no medical aid, right? Because I think this team is built for Chelsea to actually fail, right? They cannot sign anyone. So why not let a new B coach, even if it's a legend, why not let a new B coach who's still going to find his straps, and if he fails, there's an excuse for him to say that, oh, well, he didn't get to sign anybody. So there is a win-win in this loss-loss situation for Chelsea, because if they don't make Champions League and they lose, both club and Lampard leave with that excuse that transfer window, we couldn't sign, and, you know, we still love Frank, it was tough. And they both win in the sense that when they leave, they can reset and say, okay, now we can spend $300 million again. Now let's go for, you know, this coach, that coach, and sign this player. That's exactly.
I don't think so. I think that Frank Lampard is not a bad choice. The thing is, sometimes it's
Chelsea
like how,
don't sign not a bad listen, choice. Listen, Chelsea always get bad.
I agree, but Chelsea, if ever there was a team that was prepped for a transfer ban, it is Chelsea, because Chelsea has over 30 players
everywhere
that they have all over the place. If you look at the number of players that Chelsea has sold that became really accomplished players, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, Mo Salah, Lukaku, all of those players, they all came through this same model, which means that, you know, with the players that they have, even Tammy Abrahams and you know, I mean, Hudson Odoi almost went to Bayern. What you'll find is that if he can just pull up his socks and know how to utilize those players, he may not win the league, but he can.
What's realistic? What's a realistic
for
finish?
Me, I think
with that squad, guys,
I think if he can get that squad into top six, yeah.
Okay, I mean, this is, and remember, they still, you mentioned Champions League, you still have Champions League to play.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't look like it's going points. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be a good Champions League campaign for them.
I mean, God forbid they run
into. It's only game one.
God forbid they run into a Barcelona in the group stages, and you've got Tammy Abraham trying to crack through that defense. Or let's put it this way. You've got Andreas Christensen and Kurt Zuma trying to handle Griezmann, Salah, Dembele, Messi. Lord have mercy.
Okay, well, let's swiftly move on from Chelsea and Ola, a quick summation of Arsenal and their first game.
1-0 to the Arsenal. Look, it was a really solid performance in a sense that game last season, Arsenal draw or lose, right? And I think the defense really, you know, held its own. And you know, in the first game of the season away from home against, I mean, Newcastle have spent, guys. You know, they've also reinforced. It was always going to be tricky. And it was a typical sort of performance that a team that is trying to contend, you know, for some form of a charge somewhere, you know, be it the league or be it top four, has to put in at some point in the season. Yeah. And I'm glad it was the first game of the season. Because, like I said, you know, the games, you know, where Arsenal either drew 1-1 or 2-2 or lost 3-2, you know, those were the games where that sort of performance, they didn't grind out results. And, you know, it was also good to see some of the new players, you know, get a feel of British football. And, you know, some of them look decent, you know. Obviously, it's going to take time. I mean, last season, we lost our first two games, albeit, you know, it was Man City and Chelsea back-to-back. But I think this time around, you know, to start with a win away from home, clean sheet, those are the three boxes that Arsenal, you know, for the last 2 years have had to tick. Yeah. Away wins,
Arsenal, the Chiefs of England now.
Chiefs of England, sorry. Like, no.
Okay, so that's Arsenal. A quick report back on Liverpool's performance first up.
I thought it was a very decent game. I thought Norwich came out, you know, not really afraid to attack, which is something most teams wouldn't do at Anfield.
Yeah.
And, you know, by first half, the game was practically wrapped up. And I don't think Liverpool got out of second gear. to get to 4-0. It's unfortunate that they are having to lose Alisson for a couple of weeks, which maybe someone said something about Adrian maybe having some multi man with him.
Like, I'm not here to deputize him.
I'm here to play, you know. So he's got his opportunity, and then, you know, the surprise for me was Origi seems to have carried on from where he left off last season. Yeah, taking his chances. So it says that, you know, nobody's going to... I mean, everybody in that team will fight for a shirt, especially that Klopp didn't go and sign players.
Yeah.
It then shows also with, you know, Mane being away and Origi coming in, had a hand in the first goal, scored the second goal. And, you know, you always say things about Roberto Firmino. I thought he was absolutely... brilliant on
Did he score?
Well, maybe he needs to change.
Origi scored Firmino.
Firmino needs to change his shirt number to 10. Then you'll appreciate him.
Actually, yes, because he is a 10, not this.
He's not a number nine.
Don't tell Klopp that.
Well, he thrives in the club system. And he does a damn good job at what he does. You know,
he really does.
Does so a good job.
We're not surprised.
I mean, two of his teammates were joint top scorers last season, so that's
we're not surprised, I guess. Liverpool. We're not surprised at Liverpool's performance, I guess. Definitely surprised at United's win. Arsenal not terribly surprised. We're not going to touch on City because they just
Raheem Sterling.
They are
a hat trick.
City are illegal.
What they're doing in English football is
steroids.
I had City winning that game by a close margin because I thought, you know, West Ham have also invested away from home, first game of the season, and to put five so mercilessly like that
with the players that you had sitting on the
we just have to acknowledge that Raheem Sterling is.
No, he's legit. He's legit.
He's
legit.
Is he world class?
No. And it's a travesty that FIFA committee have not put him on that world based nomination.
Yeah, he should be there.
It's a travesty.
Actually, that's true. There's a lot of players. There's a lot of players in that list that just
should be there. He's had a phenomenal year, and I think that, you know, people don't appreciate what he does. I thought even at Liverpool, some of the stuff that he did, his problem was that maybe his finishing wasn't. Right up there, but I think working with Pep, he's done so much better in terms of his positioning that Pep is not afraid to play him as a some kind of false nine or something, because he can get behind people, and then now he's very calm the way he finishes. You know,
personally, it must be such a dream to be able, because okay, yes, he's got plenty of pace, but it must be such a dream to play in front of that midfield, those people. I mean, literally any of them
David Silva and
any of them can play.
Over the years, people have criticized Pep for God knows what. You know, oh, he always takes on the easy job. He doesn't take the challenge. Hasn't won the Champions League outside Barca and so forth. But you've got to give him praise for Raheem Sterling. I'm talking about number 17 he was wearing, right, at Liverpool. And I just look back at that Sterling, and I'm thinking to myself, the Sterling that I see
today, he was a Sean Wright Phillips back,
right? Yeah, you were exactly.
Yeah, but I look at the Sterling that I see,
and Pep obviously has done something. Pep could have easily said, you know what, I like Sterling, but I can get a Douglas Costa, right? And he stuck with this guy and worked with him and refined him. And arguably, you know, one of Pep's greatest works is what he's done for Sterling, because he could leave the Premier League, right? Given England a heck of a world beater.
Yeah.
Right? Not many coaches can do that. A lot of coaches come in and leave teams that are beaters. But I'm talking, Pep literally can leave England saying, I left and I built you guys one of your greatest players, who at Liverpool, let's face it, was, you know, in and out, and, you know, probably would not have started every game in the future, because, you know, Liverpool would have probably signed, like I said, another more refined player.
I think that if he played with Klopp, I'm sure he would have gotten better as well.
Because, oh, look at Sturridge. Sturridge was firing, and then Klopp comes in, and
But he had injuries. He had a lot of injuries. If you look at the players that were in that Liverpool team under Rodgers when they were struggling, you look at Adam Lallana, you look at even Dejan Lovren, you look at, you know, I think for me particularly Roberto Firmino. Brendan Rodgers had no clue what to do with him. You know, was playing him out on the wings sometimes, but you know,
because couldn't score.
But look at, how himself Adam Lallana before his injuries was probably the leader of the press for Liverpool. So a lot of those I mean, when you have that quality of coaching, you know, Pep, Klopp, you know, to a large extent, I wouldn't even put Ole in that bracket, but I think that Pochettino has done tremendous work with them, but with Ole we'll see as well, you know, because I think somehow he's put a kind of belief in Rashford and Martial, which Tony Mourinho didn't do.
And that's where I think, you know, just to quickly touch on this, the sort of next phase of victories that coaches who don't win trophies can have over other managers that do win trophies and leagues is what they've done to players.
Yeah.
And I think that was a trend back in the 90s where there were a lot of coaches that didn't win, you know, never trophy laden CV.
Yeah.
But you could look back and say, man, without this coach,
yeah,
this guy is not the same. Without, and you, like you touched on with Pochettino, say what you want to say. Pochettino hasn't won a trophy, so be it. But you cannot deny that he's taken Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli, Harry Kane, Son, right?
Definitely.
He's taken those guys to the next level. And I mean, we need to get out of this, oh, but what have they won? What trophy has he won? Pochettino always says, I'm also a coach, by the way, right? And I think that's an element that's been lost in football, is coaching.
Yeah.
So many managers complain, no, I don't have the budget, the transfer fees, this transfer fees, that. Granted, that is a huge factor, but a lot of coaching still has to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's where managers today, they're going to be called upon in the future as to, okay, fine, you know, as much as we can give you the money, but you still need to improve players, which is your fundamental job as a coach. Improve the players.
You know, I before we move on, you mentioned that, and within English football, top flight football anyway, someone like Nuno Espirito Santo is doing exactly the same thing at Wolves.
Good point.
He's made them such a fantastic team. You know, they're not going to, you know, win titles, but he's
going to beat United next week.
Shut your face. But he's done a fantastic, actually, no, not actually, no, you might not be lying. The Molineux is not an easy place to go to. But, you know, he's done such a fantastic job. I go back to someone like Fadlu Davids while he was at Maritzburg United, that period while he was coaching there, and what he did with the team, you know, before he left, was absolute magic. So I definitely do agree with you in that sense. It's going to be a period is coming, if it's not here already, where, you know, coaches and their imprint is going to be, you know, held in the same regard as trying to win a trophy, you know, like an FA Cup or a League Cup or anything like that. But before we close, we're just going to touch on some of the transfers that have happened. You know, the window is going to come to a close, the European window, and I guess the South African window. But in England, it has come to a close, well, for incomings anyway. And we actually mentioned before we went on air, Alex Iwobi leaving Arsenal for Everton. Bit of a shame that, in terms of what, you know, he had done in the last 12 months to improve. In Spain, La Liga starts this week, and by all accounts, Barcelona will definitely be starting with Antoine Griezmann up front. Pre-season, his performances,
very. I mean, look, Antoine Griezmann is a top athlete.
Yeah,
and you know, it doesn't matter where he is. He makes a mark. I think he's going to leave. Somehow, you know, I won't see him and Suarez having quite a formidable...
They seem to have...
Yeah, because Antoine Griezmann's movement is what I like. And also, you know, he's brilliant with set pieces.
Yeah.
Which is something that Messi usually takes. So maybe he'll give them an option in terms of being able to play it. But, you know, talking about Alex Iwobi...
And he's quite good in the air for the guy that...
No, he's a complete striker.
Short.
You know, the one thing that you know, we picked up with Iwobi, which Mario sent through earlier, was also about how Everton gained 150,000 Nigerian contingent, which is
like, what's like 0.1%
No, 0.1%
of Nigeria. That also
no, which is not surprising because Everton has had a great history with Nigeria. Yeah. You know, Yobo, Yakubu, Ime Akpan.
In fact, with and, African, with
about, yeah, yeah. This, he, Iwobi is about their fifth Nigerian player that they've had. But since he moved, they've gone from 90,000 to 150,000, which is massive, and I think that they're going to even grow even more once he starts playing. Because remember, he hasn't played any
game.
It's
a great opportunity for him to,
yeah.
So the whole 38 game season for him to start at least 35 of those games and actually, you know, start to meet that potential that we know he has.
I think the best sort of part of this transfer for Iwobi is the kind of pressure he won't have to face.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And you know, obviously, he was in, you know, bad timing, you know, and bad place in a sense that Arsenal were in a position of transition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, a large part of the fan base demanded results now. They wanted, you know, there was no period or time to let guys grow into it. Although Iwobi did start under Wenger. But remember, that was under Wenger. Then moves to a new coach who wants something differently. So for a young player, obviously, that's going to take time for him to develop. And, you know, I really think that Iwobi could eventually potentially be like another, what Arsenal did with Serge Gnabry or what Liverpool did with Sterling. Because to me, Iwobi needed a level of guidance that, you know, you see with Pep and to his players, that I think if the right, you know, I'm not saying Emery's not the right coach, maybe just needed more time, but there's a spark that you see in that guy. That it just takes something to just click and there's a puzzle there and Iwobi is unplayable. And I mean, I'll take you back to the second game of the season against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. He was unplayable. Iwobi was unplayable. I mean, if you could get that in a 38 game season, you can get that guy to play at least 20 games like that.
Yeah.
Right? I think it was a big mistake to let him go. Because especially after they got in Pepe, you know, the Arsenal team looked like they were in good shape, then you sell Iwobi. Because the thing with Ozil is, Ozil on a good day is probably the best creative player. I'm saying on a good day. Now,
when is that good day?
Now, since he's been at Arsenal, we haven't seen that. So,
okay,
if I was coach
on a good day since he's been at Arsenal, he hasn't done that. 7 years in, mate. 7 years in.
if I was the coach, between the two of them, I would have let Ozil go.
But he can't. No one wants to take those wages, and neither does Ozil want to take a pay cut.
Well, you know, so that's the thing. So, you know, where they are now, then they haven't made a good.
Speaking of social media, I saw a tremendous bit of art on social media where they had Unai Emery. It was like one of those split pictures.
Yeah.
So they had Unai Emery at the top on the phone, and the middle picture was that robbery incident. And then below it was another picture of Unai Emery looking disappointed. And the caption said, yes, Ozil in the car. And then the robbers get there, then you see the fight. And then below there's like some conversation and somebody's saying, no, Kolasinac stopped it. And Emery's like, oh, no. So they made it seem like, no, they were actually trying to kidnap Ozil and get him out of Austin. But Kolasinac saved him.
Oh, well, that's a great way to actually end today's episode. But before we go, gentlemen, we could, by the time we meet again, have Neymar at Barcelona. Reports suggest that Barcelona's director of football, Eric Abidal, is in France with a board member from Barca to iron out.
That's true.
The talks. So we could have Griezmann. In fact, it looks like it really will. It actually might happen. A Griezmann, Suarez, Messi, Neymar situation.
The talks is that, you know, PSG want money as well.
Yeah.
Right? So they're looking at Ousmane Dembele and possibly Rakitic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the issue also is, you know, PSG cannot also take on too many you know, people in the same position.
Yeah.
So they might also want to look in at Umtiti, apparently.
Mm.
So Umtiti might also be the dangling carrot there. But there's a whole lot of logistics that they're going to work out. But as far as that deal goes,
2.5 weeks to sort it out.
As far as that deal goes, you know, I'm not so sure if Barcelona, you know, are going to be you know, when they say less is more.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if Barcelona are going to be gaining with Neymar coming back, because I'll tell you why I like Antoine Griezmann.
Any team will gain with Neymar.
Or like Brazil have.
Well, look, he's still the talisman.
Like PSG have. Right? My point is that, you know, with
But Neymar delivered it for PSG in terms of goals.
There's a level of professionalism that Antoine Griezmann comes with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's there with his collar up, and as much as he's a fun-loving guy, he comes from a Simeone, you know, back room, so he knows what it's like to knuckle down.
Yeah.
And Neymar at this stage, there's too much, there's desperation, okay? I just see a player right now, the Ballon d'Ors that people said you were going to win, the World Cups that people said you were going to win, you haven't won them. And, you know, there's just way, way, way too much desperation
Neymar is still, he's still one of the top three players.
And I don't disagree with that, but I don't think Barcelona need that.
They do. They got hammered by Liverpool.
Either way, if it does happen, and it does, it's just going to be, I guess Valverde is not going to have any sleep, because I don't know how you play all four at the same time. But he's going to have to. He's going to have to find
I mean, I've been looking at videos and pictures of Luis Suarez. That guy looks fit.
He does look
lean. Mean. The goals that he scored.
Suarez is he's a top class finisher.
You know, there was a period last season, again, before we close, where I think probably a lot of world football thought he might be finished, because he was missing chances that, you know, Suarez gobbles up for fun. But
he came up against Liverpool, that's why.
Please. He does look clean. He does look sharp. And, you know, again, this is a Barcelona side that is yet to fully welcome back Lionel Messi to the picture. And imagine that happens, and now you've got Neymar to deal with as well. It might not just be 5-0 when it comes to the El Clasico. It might be a 6 or 7. But that is basically the show for today. We will have La Liga up and running by the time we congregate once again. Premier League will be in its second week. And we would have had the MTN 8 as well. So good luck to all the 8 teams playing in the opening round of Wafa Wafa.
Sorry, we'll see. You're not one of them.
Shut your face. Good luck to all of them, and we certainly hope for one or two shocks when it comes to the weekend in the MTN 8. But from myself, Lwazi Sikubu.
Hola Makwaza.
And next time we meet, we'll Liverpool will win the second European title. Emeka Anyadike is signing off.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I think that's how we close.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username PitchInvaded.